Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Bonk. Today is part one of two parts of a fascinating and informative interview with Anne Kayala Kelly about her new book, Our Rights to Self-Determination, a Hawaiian Manifesto. It's a book you can hold in the palm of your hand, as she says, yet powerful enough to fill Hawaiian hearts with truth, urgency, and the courage to stand up for our rights as a people and a nation. I knew virtually nothing about Hawaii, so I learned a lot, and I think there's so much to learn to understand from a native perspective what has the history and what is going on. And if you can hang in there through some of the nitty-gritty towards the end of the interview in part two, she explains the deeper true meaning of the word aloha. And not too deliberately, but maybe I noticed it subconsciously, the discussion with Kayala took place on International Day of the World's Indigenous Peoples, which is also Nagasaki Day, which ties in with much of the interview because Hawaii is severely militarized, partly for its strategic positioning in the Pacific Ocean, but those are the main industries are militarism and tourism, the smiley face and the belligerent face of the same coin. And you can find out more and purchase her book. And she also has a documentary film from 2009, which I won't try to pronounce. I don't want to mispronounce it. So the translation, The Wrongful Occupation of Hawaii. And you can find out about that and her at her website, annekayalakelly.com. AnnekayalaKelly. And here's Kayala's bio. And Kayala Kelly is an award-winning filmmaker and journalist. For more than 20 years, her writings and other media productions have focused on Native Hawaiian rights, culture and politics, indigenous peoples, demilitarization, and the environment. She lives on the rainy side of, of an Hawaiian island, where she wrote The Manifesto, the first in a series of little books of sovereignty. And the artist, I won't mispronounce her name, but she, on the cover, she depicts the road to Mauna Kea, where Hawaiian elders were arrested for protesting construction of the 30-meter telescope, TMT. And her website is makaiwakanui.com. So please give a listen with an open mind. You may hear some stuff you've not heard before, and with an open heart, because it's not just information and history. It's about people and the land and the water and all the habitats. So here's part one. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, Kayala. It's wonderful to be talking with you. A long distance away in, Honamu, Hawaii. And I'm on the East Coast, and I first heard about you listening to you on First Voices Radio some years ago, and then after a bunch of years emailing from time to time, I had heard about your documentary film, and then you came, that was in 2009, and you just came out with a new little book, so I had to read it. So it's Our Rights to Self-Determination, a Hawaiian Manifesto. And it's, I don't know how you pronounce, kuleana? Kuleana works? Is that how you pronounce the Hawaiian word?
Right, kuleana. Aloha, Monk, and mahalo for having me on your show. Yeah, it's kuleana works.
Okay.
Kuleana, the word means, it has more than one meaning, but basically it means that it's about being responsible.
Yeah.
Having a responsibility to something.
I like that, because I've heard a lot, especially from Native people, how, U.S. politics and stuff is so much about rights, and people are always clamoring for rights, but they don't bother to just be responsible for things. It's sort of a subtle thing.
And yet the name of my little book is Our Rights.
Well, that too, yeah. So you covered both.
But, if you're talking about American Empire, you have to... Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're forced to you know, had the indigenous, I guess, you know, that's such like, you know, that word is almost becoming cliche because of, it's just become the word indigenous. But, you know, we are both.
Yeah.
So Kuleana also means privilege.
Hmm.
And so in Hawaiian thought, if you have privilege, you have responsibility that goes with it. People don't always necessarily honor that, but that's my understanding of Kuleana. It's as much about privilege as it is about anything else. It's about being responsible.
Yeah, that's the good positive side of privilege. So yeah, as you say on the back of the book, this little book is 12,000 words long, small enough to fit in the palm of a hand, powerful enough to fill Hawaiian hearts with truth, urgency, and the courage to stand up for our rights as a people and a nation. And it's a wonderful little book. I learned so much. It got some history. It, you know, conveys some of the Hawaiian people and what's actually going on, the nitty gritty. And it's not very pretty, but I'm sure the culture is, and what we have seen, or what I have seen growing up on the East Coast, Hawaii is always pretty. I grew up, you know, as a little kid, I still remember the Hawaiian Punch commercials. And hula dancers, mm-hmm. and leis. That's about, you know, then maybe later on in my 20s or whatever, I was like, oh, Hawaii 5-0. So, like, mm-hmm. what happened as a start, just to start into the, you know, getting, however much it gets into the book or in general, but just to kind of catch people up a little, like, what happened there that, like, that's all that I basically have known about Hawaii for so long. So that's part of why I'm glad to read and talk with you.
Wow, yeah, Hawaiian Punch commercials, yeah, Hawaii 5-0, yeah, these were, you know, if you think about narrative, mm-hmm. I mean, you're a writer, you're a reader, if you think about narrative, it's structured, and it has intent, it has meaning, it has a place it's trying to get to, and the narrative of Hawaii for well over a century now, has centered on it being a possession of America, the United States. Somehow, it's called part of the United States, right? It's thought mm-hmm. of, first it was taken as a and turned into a so-called territory. And then there was the 1959 so-called statehood vote, or plebiscite. So here we are, more than 2,400 miles from the west coast of the United States, the most isolated, peopled archipelago on the entire planet. And we've all been taught to call the United States the mainland. It's not a mainland. You know, right. It's a continent far, far away. So, you know, the narrative of Hawaii that, you know, your reference being just your exposure to what is Hawaiian, it was Hawaii 5-0, it was commercials, it was vacation. That was all constructed over the 20th century, throughout the 20th century, to make sure that, you know, Americans are comfortable here. Americans see this as their entitlement to come to this place, this paradise, and to completely erase the Hawaiian reality and history. So it only took decades. It only takes like one generation to destroy something. You can destroy a language in a generation. That's what they did. It took two generations to almost completely destroy the Hawaiian language. Luckily, it's survived, and it's been being revived still yet for the past 30 years or so. We're very fortunate that way. Most indigenous languages just die. So that kind of a narrative that you were exposed to, and also people think of Hawaii as like surfing. They think of it as a passive place and beautiful and enjoyable, and they don't have any, they have no need or desire to know what it really is, you know, which, and I do talk about that a little bit in the book, you know, about what's being done to this place so that Americans and everybody else can have that fantasy. So a whole nation, an actual nation state had to be, was destroyed by the United States, was crushed by the United States, and then the occupation began in 1898. So that's why Hawaiians, you know, most Americans don't realize there has been a Hawaiian sovereignty movement for many decades. And the reason for that is because the United States illegally overthrew a nation-state government in 1893, and then 5 years later took control of it and began what we refer to as the illegal occupation of Hawaii. So you would never hear some other narrative. That's the only narrative Americans are ever going to hear, is this kind of commercial narrative. They make a lot of movies here. And Hawaiians are always just kind of positioned in a passive, secondary way, you know, in any kind of an American narrative. That might change. I mean, it sort of seems like it's maybe kind of sort of changing in terms of, like, indigenous, because indigenous is another way to accept Native Hawaiians without feeling threatened. You know, do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. It's like, it sounds like the whole, you know, the sort of entertainment industry. You know, it's like a combination of the entertainment industry and that facade, and then also literally, you know, the abuse of others' lands, which is, you know, the general history of the whole Turtle Island in America, just, you know, using other people's lands and resources for, you know, that becomes this, like, touristy entertainment lifestyle, you know, at the expense of. So that, it sounds like, you know, that's what your book gets into, like this comfort zone and the paradise that is presented is really at the expense of the native culture there and the actual habitat, like you said, it's
the environment, yeah,
the biggest GMO places now. So
it's like, yes, it is the largest largest outdoor testing, like the highest concentration of outdoor GMO test sites is here. Just like the largest concentration of military is here. The military command, largest military command on earth, is on Oahu. And that's something that, you know, I say those words, and every time I say it, I don't understand why, when I say that, or any Hawaiian says that, why that doesn't land like a gut punch. Like why Americans don't give a damn. And why the rest of the world kind of acts like nobody said it. I'm at this point, by the way, Monk, where I'm like, I'm done being polite about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hawaiians are forced to be polite, and it's also kind of a cultural tradition to be polite, so we get, I call it the double whammy. We're already indoctrinated from the uterus. We're in the womb, and we're already indoctrinated, and then you come into this kind of culture of, it's called aloha. We have that. And so when we do speak out, or I do any of the work that I do, it's never comfortable. It's always very uncomfortable. I've never been comfortable with speaking to these, you know, to ecocide and ethnocide. These are really uncomfortable things to talk about. However, I'm just done being polite. I mean, it's just so disgusting the way Hawaiians have been made to be polite about our disappearance, our erasure, you know, which we're just being replaced by settler colonial population. Steadily over the past 130 years.
Yeah, there's one little section.
I don't know if I got off track from your original question.
No, I think that's fine, because there's one little section in your book that I had highlighted, which ties in with what you said. I'll just read that, because it explains why you have no reason to be polite. You write, that's how it has always felt to Hawaiians, invaded, inundated, removed for mostly... Haole Americans.
Haole.
They come here to golf and surf and breathe in the ocean air, live in their townhouses and condos on our graves and sacred sites. Like, that just stood out to me. Like it's hard to be polite if someone is having a party on, you know, graves and sacred sites.
Yeah, well, that's the reality of Hawaii. And people on Maui, there's been a fight. Hawaiians are constantly, by the way, having to fight to stop the desecration of burials. I mean, actual burial grounds. People build houses, mansions, condos, right? There's been a fight on Maui, for instance, okay? The sand dunes on Maui. These were battlegrounds from, you know, Hawaiians, we had a history way before everybody else got here, so there were battles and there were burial grounds. And so that'd be, to us, what gets done to these kind of battle burial sites is like, that'd be like going to Arlington National Cemetery, mm-hmm. digging it up and throwing that, you know, just throwing those bones in the trash. It's worse even over there, because they actually take the sand dunes and they grind it into stuff that gets turned into cement. So our actual bones, monk, are the cement on Oahu that some rich Haole guy has managed to sell those dunes. And by the way, dunes, just in nature, in any ecosystem, anytime you see sand dunes, nature made that. People didn't do that. And dunes play a role in protecting areas, whether it's from rising waters because it's near the ocean or it's from winds. So they're not just desecrating us and making bank off of the desecration of our EV. Our EV is our bones. They're also like destroying the environment as they do it. And so anytime you ever, you might once in a while hear about the Honolulu Rail Project, which I call it Senator Daniel Inouye's parting shot before he died, because it's just a black hole that the government is pouring billions and billions of dollars into. The whole thing is a desecration project. I mean, the actual sites where they're trying to build this thing that they can't seem to build, and it's already like $10 billion over. I mean, it's insane what's going on with this thing, okay? So the dunes from Maui sold to those, to that project, to make the cement for the columns. So Hawaiians are never surprised when we read another story about how the columns are cracking, how this thing is never, it's just this broken project. It will always be a pit of money because it is a desecration project. So it doesn't matter. They can pour $1 trillion into that rail, which is a useless project because it just does nothing, okay? It's not even going to go to the airport. I mean, it's just like a ridiculous money pit. And it won't matter how much they pour into it because it's literally got the remains of our ancestors in it. That's the American practice in Hawaii, is to do that to us. So, yeah, I don't think I should be polite about that.
Yeah.
I don't think any Hawaiian should be polite about that.
Yeah, Kiala, in your film, that it's like, how, sometimes I wonder how to bridge that, you know, disconnect, because there were some people in the documentary film that they're like, somebody mentions about the over that something like Walmart or something is being built over the burial sites, and somebody's reaction is kind of like, you know, well, they're underground, you know, so like what difference does it make? There's like a disconnect there, and I don't. That's one of those like how does one get through to people like that? And maybe you and other Hawaiians have asked yourself that question, because it's like so numb and cold. It just seems, you know, like. That's the word to come.
Well, it's American.
Okay.
So it's an American
the programming. Sickness. Yeah, the programming.
I mean, they're, like you yourself said, what did you grow up knowing? You knew about Hawaiian Punch.
Mm-hmm.
You knew about hula and lei as entertainment. You knew about Hawaii Five-O. Like, if that's the only food people are fed, that's all they're going to be nurtured by is the lie. And they're going to be confused and a little bit annoyed and maybe even insulted when a Hawaiian like me says, hey, Haole, get the capital F out of here, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to be like, wait, what? I didn't do anything. It's the mentality of, well, my great-granddaddy didn't own any slaves. It's the same thinking. It's the settler colonial mind of the American population. Now, not every single person, you know, is in that condition, because you know, a lot of people have some education and also compassion. You just basically need some compassion, really, and that'll help you, because that'll just help you not do harm. Or if you get called out for harming something, you won't defend it and go, yeah, but they're dead, who cares? You'll say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know. You'll have a different response to the information. And what happens with, you know, this is a small place, and 10 million mostly Americans come over here. And they all see themselves as, like, I think I say this quite a bit in the little book, like, they think they're innocent.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see themselves as, they don't look at themselves and go, there's 10 million of me. They go, it's just me and my family. They don't have any sense of anything but their own entitlement. Because once they pay for that ticket, boy, capitalism's like that, right? You give me your money and you have just bought your opportunity to do whatever you want, because you bought this, right? You paid for it. And in the mind of Americans, they think that's, they earn something or they own something by doing that. And then if you bring that kind of a mentality to an island place, you bring this also it's a continental mentality. You bring it to a tiny place, where they're just passing through, basically. They don't care what they do to the place. They're like, I didn't throw any garbage out of my rental car. They don't know they're trashing the place just by being here. I came up with this idea like a long time ago. I can't count how many of my own people I offend with my humor. But I came up with this idea a long time ago. I was like, hey, we should create, like, you know how you get on an airplane? I don't know. I guess they still have those, what do we call them? We call them barf bags.
Oh, yeah.
Where if somebody gets air sick, they can use this if they can't get to the bathroom. They might not have those anymore. I don't think they do. But I was like, we should create bags for their, you know, I'll just say it politely, for urine and excrement, and they can take it home with them.
You know?
And I'm like, because, you know, and I was speaking specifically about this hotel in Kona where the, you know, if there's like a lot of rain, it'll flood the bathrooms and then, you know, the cesspools or whatever leak out. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. Okay? But that's because there's like a million tourists going through there using the toilet. You know, and so if you're only on a tiny an island, eventually there's too much of it. It ends up out in the ocean, it ends up all over the place. So these tourists, Americans, everybody that comes here, they never think about that when they get off the plane. They just don't. Mm-hmm. You know? They're just here to enjoy themselves, and whatever you do, don't bother them. Don't mess with their fantasy. You know, last week, and I love the Hawaiians who did this, over on Oahu, Kaimana Beach, it's a lovely tiny little beach, all the way down at the end of Waikiki, practically, it's right at Diamond Head. And it's pretty quiet down there for the most part, because the main drag of Waikiki is like kind of Vegas-y, you know, Las Vegas-like. It's like a lot of hotels, okay, and a lot of people. This is a quiet spot. And so we have our monk seal, our Hawaiian monk seal, which is one of the most endangered species in the world. This is the seal.
Oh,
there's
seal,
only
okay,
like 1,300 of them left.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So the Hawaiian monk seal, sometimes what it's called, they'll say it hauls up. It'll haul up onto a beach and it'll molt. Or if it's a mother, it'll give birth. And what happens is when a seal does that, you're supposed to stay away from them. You stay far, far away from them. They need the quiet and they need to not be touched. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So last week, a seal, a mama and her pup, I think it was, came up out of the beach out of the ocean onto the beach, Kaimana Beach, this tiny little tourist beach. I mean, the photos I saw was like hundreds of tourists standing like 5 feet away taking pictures. And it's so horrifying that some Hawaiians went down there and chased the tourists away. And I loved it because this is what you have to do now. You have to just go down there and threaten them and say, if you come near here, I'm going to kick your ass. Like, you have to go and tell them, get away from this animal, you know. And they might be there for a week or two. That's what happens. Because the animal has to be the animal. It has to do what it needs to do. The people don't need to be there. The seal does.
Exactly. Yeah, I just read that today or yesterday. It was about on Long Island, the beaches, there's a bird that usually it has to have, for years, it was like for 20, 25 years, I've been learning about the piping plover. It's this adorable little bird, and it has to have like a nesting area. And there was something in the news, I forget the details, but it was something about somebody, they're trying to find somebody for messing with the, you know, the plover's nesting area. And I don't know what happened, but it's the same kind of, it's a similar kind of thing where nature has to do its thing, but, you know, somebody's got some other agenda that gets in the way.
Well, it's hugely inconvenient for nature. It's like nature is just always inconveniencing people. You know, Hawaii is also the largest endangered species. We're called the endangered species capital of the world.
That's another one I learned from your book, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, these are not things that America, you know, you'll never see this in a tourism ad. Yes, please come to the endangered species capital of the world for a kind vacation. Please go golf on this burial ground. You know, the golf course is on our burial sites. I mean, here, stay in this townhouse that's being built on a graveyard. Like, that's going on Maui, too. Same project as the Dune project, by the way. So it's like you've got these capitalist, profit-driven, tourism-driven, settler colonial-driven, American-driven projects that desecrate our burials and kill species. Just kill them. End them. Forever.
It's maniacal.
Right? Yeah. It is. It's pathological. So we're dealing basically with a serial killer mentality, only this 10 million serial killer mentality, the serial killer people that come here don't know that they are that, so they're walking around acting like they're not doing what they're doing. They're walking around acting like they aren't pathological because they've been indoctrinated into this idea that they're innocent. You know, they're not doing anything wrong when they're here, and they don't understand that the entire infrastructure that they're standing on, that they're driving on, that they're partying on, and they don't have any sense of, like the Hawaiian word, kuleana. They have no sense of responsibility at all because they got an airline ticket and they paid for that hotel.
Yeah. Has it changed at all? Like, you know, in the years that you've been doing activist work and writing and making films, have the, you know, say the tourist types or whoever, has it gotten worse, or is it, you know, are there some that are even listen? I mean, is it just the same, kind of the same thing in different package?
Well, that's kind of like asking me if, you know, the tsunami, this newer tsunami, the more recent tsunami hurts as much as the one from last year, right? Because they're just a wave of people.
Yeah.
And so there's this, but there is an expectation that Hawaiians are supposed to like pick through, you know, the gnat shit to get to the pepper. It's like we're supposed to sort of be able to pull the ones out and go, yeah, this is a good person. I guess I would look at it as like military industrial complex. Like a person can be like, you know, these guys will go into, men and women will go into the military, volunteers, so-called, but they get paid okay. Like, no, you know, by the way, the military over here, they get the best of everything. They've destroyed the market, the rental market on Oahu. It's just nightmarish what they've done to the people who live here just by being here, but they get special discounts on everything because Americans, you know, love their military and they think of them as some kind of heroes since September 11th instead of like just the occupying force getting a free ride. But, you know, it's like these people just sort of see themselves in this, in the light of, like I said, their innocence project, and they don't, and then I have to sort of determine like, oh, is this a nice person or not? It gets exhausting.
Mm, you know? Yeah.
There's 10 million of them. I say just based on them actually being here at all, it means they're actually either extraordinarily ignorant, which is not exactly the kind of person anybody would want to hang out with, or they just don't care. So either way, it's a lose-lose for Hawaiians.
Yeah, the one of the things that highlighted in the book is the, well, the, it's like the two prongs are, actually I was recently thinking of the, talking to a friend, and I was thinking of the, there's these Greek theater masks, you know, it's like one face smiling and one face frowning. Have you seen those?
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, I mean,
comedy and tragedy.
It's comedy, tragedy, sort of like manic depressive. But I'm thinking of that now because it's like the tourism is the smiley face, and the militarism is kind of like the frown. But it's still, but they're both the masks. It's all. It's really, it's like, you know, it's like you said, settler colonial theater. But it's not theater because, you know, the what you're expressing, the emotion you're expressing, it, you know, it's deeply disturbing. You know. It's just astounding. I mean, I read about this stuff and I know about it intellectually and I feel it, but it's, you know, it's definitely, it gets accentuated to hear it from, you know, someone like you, a native person right there who's, you know, has to deal with it. One of the other quote that stood out to me, like, of course, emotion appeals to people, but, and sometimes statistics don't, but this statistic kind of just blew my mind. Where once there were farms and fish ponds that sustained millions of Hawaiians over millennia, now there are multi-million dollar houses, condos, golf courses, hotels, and dead reefs, and 95% of everything consumed in Hawaii is shipped in. And I think somewhere you may have mentioned that at one time, obviously, an island people had to be self-sufficient. So that turnaround of self-sufficiency to 95% being shipped in is just astounding.
Oh yeah, no, that's another thing. It's like Hawaii's being killed, and it's every day it's killed a little bit more, and eventually it'll be completely dead if we don't stop that. But yeah, if you think about it, right, if we're talking about this really isolated place, I mean, Captain Cook, this was this, you know, everybody knows this is where he died, okay? This was his last stop, okay? And he got lost when he rolled up on our islands. He wasn't even, it's like, he was lost. So, you know, if we're the last place, the last people that Whitey discovered, okay? You know, Australia, which is this extraordinarily ancient place and extraordinarily ancient indigenous peoples, They have hundreds of nations there too. And that was where Captain Cook started off. And this is the other side of the Pacific where Captain Cook left, you know, where the Hawaiian word is hala, time to go. He left. And he died here. And if you think about that, it's like it hasn't been going on for that long, the kind of colonial destruction of Hawaii. It hasn't been going on for as long as it has been in other places.
Right.
So some of what we are and who we are still is here. And I'm sorry, I'm drifting off from your original question because I'm thinking about Captain Cook now.
You said everybody knows about it. I didn't know that. I mean, I've heard of Captain Cook, but so I learned something. Yeah, I was just quoting the statistic of the 95%. From self-sufficient to everything shipped in. I mean, nowadays with so many trucks and things delivered, it's not as mind-boggling in a sense, you know, thinking about it. But technically, but just thinking about it, literally, it's like, how did... That's like the total reversal of, you know, the original way of, again,
self-sufficiency.
Well,
it's anti-life is what it is. It's about being it's about uncreating something. But the thing about, now that, you know, thanks for bringing me back to the original question before I went on my Captain Cook rant. The thing is, yeah, so Hawaiian's been here for a long time, okay, thousands of generations. And in that time, Hawaiians developed these amazing ways of living and of surviving. And one of those things, the most important thing, is called the Ahupua'a system. Or I think it's the most important kind of technology, that and our fish ponds. These were brilliant, genius creations of how to live in a small place, an island place surrounded only by ocean, and thrive. You know, Kamehameha the Great was 7 feet tall, and he wasn't even like one of the taller ones. He was thought of as not that tall. Like, Hawaiians are very healthy, very strong, and they knew how to be a part of this place and use the land in a way that didn't destroy it so they could thrive. They could thrive from the fish that they captured in the fish ponds, and they could thrive from the system, the Ahupua'a system, is about how to use land from the mountain all the way down to the ocean. Okay? And how to make it so that it grows the food that you want, but that water that you're using still makes it to where it needs to get to. Okay? Like, if you look at, like, the droughts, for instance, let's just talk about the Colorado River for a second. Mm-hmm. So the Colorado River, by the time it gets to Mexico, by the time it gets to where it's trying to get to, it's a trickle. Because everybody's sucked off of it. Los Angeles is sucked off of it. You know, the valleys of California have sucked off of it. This is not what it was meant to do. So it's a similar kind of reality here. So, you know, the water, it starts in the mountains, and it needs to get down to the ocean because there's certain fish down there. There's whole ecosystems that depend on certain things arriving. And so what's happened is, yeah, it's only taken the United States, you know, it's taken them less than a century to create a situation where Hawaiians, we don't even have our own food. We don't, you know, the ocean is being polluted to death. These tourism ships that come through here, that's like having a town of 5,000 people arrive, okay? And all they do is, you know, crap and, you know, they destroy the ocean out there with their sewage. They're just going around. It's like one of the most polluting parts of the tourism industry is cruise ships. Like, what kind of a sadist takes a cruise? Like, do they not know what they're doing as they're out there? It's mind-boggling. Every time I see them, I go, how can you be so dumbed down that you think this is a good idea?
So the cruise ship's actually dumping into the water.
Yeah, do you think they're, like, taking it home with them?
I'm just trying to get the logistics.
Pollution.
They're
as big a polluter. Well, there's not as many of them as the military ships, but they're all out there polluting.
That's disgusting.
Again, it's this idea that there's only a few of us, right? They're not thinking like it's just a big poop ship, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's disgusting. And so every time I see them off our shores, because, you know, I eat fish. It's like, ugh, I don't know how far out they go to dump their poop, but it's disgusting. So anyway, you know, my point is, you know, this place that was a paradise, it's It's like it really was that. I mean, these people could live and thrive here. There were as many as a million Hawaiians living here when Captain Cook showed up. That's a lot of people, because there's like 1.3 or 4 million now. And this, there, and the Hawaiians live here without destroying it. Mm-hmm. So if you think about that, they could thrive here. They were healthy. They were strong. They were well and happy. And then this, it's like, it's the exact opposite of life. So this place that was able to give life for thousands of years to these people, my ancestors, the ancestors of every living Hawaiian, this place has been turned into a toilet. It's been turned into a military industrialized, you know, place where they practice war and murder, okay, and then export that from here. You know, the greatest export from Hawaii isn't aloha, it's murder. From Murder Incorporated, the military industrial complex. Tourism industry and military industry are the two biggest destroying industries, literally the biggest destroying industries in the history of humanity, are just focused on this place. And so I want to circle back really quick to what I wrote in the little book, and the reason for that is because part of it is, back to your original question about the narrative, knowing only certain things about Hawaii that the mainstream media will tell you, or the industries controlling this place will tell you. They will tell you that I'm a radical. Like, I sound like a radical. Anybody hearing me is like, oh my God, she's, what's wrong with that woman? But it's actually the truth. The other thing is the lie. Okay. And so the best that I can do, the best that any of us can do, is to actually deal with, come from a place of truth. And so the whole thing about the little book is to say, hey, even though all these terrible things are happening and have been happening for a long time, we can actually exercise our rights. We don't have to do it within the framework of the U.S. government's stranglehold on us. Because tourism and militarism, it's like having two hands around your throat. And every time you try to speak, it chokes off more air. That's what those two industries are. It's like the right and the left hand of the United States around the Hawaiian nation's throat. So the best that I can do with any kind of media or any kind of activism is to try to move this true narrative forward and try to activate people with it, hopefully, so that the Hawaiian sovereignty movement is more than just having to defend a mountain from a telescope, which is the Mauna Kea 30-meter telescope protest. Yeah. And I do write a little bit about that in the book, too.
And that's part one of the interview with Ann Keala Kelly about what's actually happening in Hawaii and how that connects with the bigger picture, and her book, Our Rights to Self-Determination, a Hawaiian Manifesto, which you can get at her website, AnneKealaKelly.com, AnneKealaKelly.com. So next week, part two. Thank you for listening. Be well.